This week on The Right Side, a video of Jagmeet Singh being heckled takes off in the media. An oil sands company defends Notley's carbon tax, but who's actually paying? Also, Horgan's slimy remarks lead to a taxpayer-funded lawsuit? Lastly, some insensitive articles posted on September 11th. This is The Right Side, episode 34, recorded Saturday, September 16th, 2017. Media slime and insensitivity. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Right Side. This week, we're back with another episode. Patrick and myself, welcome back.
It's good to be back as well, and there's lots of fun news stories to talk about this week, as always.
Well, fun depending on your perspective of things, and I'm sure the media had lots of fun with these stories this week, and that's what we're going to parse through, and we're going to shoot through and aim to cut down the bias and sensationalism that you see here. Limited as best possible to get to the very core bits and bytes of the story here, and hopefully provide some context and clarity of what's been happening and put everyone on the right side of the news. We're a bit everywhere this week. A little bit on September 11th and terrorism, taxes, and of course, interesting thing that happened in the federal NDP leadership race. But I'll leave that to you. We can get started with that right away.
Yeah, so this there's been if you don't know, there was quite an interesting thing that happened last week, and it was at an NDP rally. So remember back on episode 29 where we did our federal NDP leadership race special, and both of us had mentioned that none of the candidates were getting any coverage in the media. It actually appears that thanks to a heckler, Jagmeet Singh has actually been in the media a lot more recently. So Singh was speaking at an event in Brampton, Ontario, and it was meant to introduce himself and his policies to the wider NDP voting public who would be voting on the leadership race. And he and his campaign called it a Jag meet and greet. And honestly, I have to take a moment to admire that pun. It's actually pretty funny.
That's good. He can do that with his name, and he's fine with that.
Yeah, exactly, right? So just as he was about to start speaking, he was getting the microphone all set up, and a woman just got right up in Singh's face and started yelling at him about how he was apparently wanting to impose Sharia law in Canada and how he supported the Muslim Brotherhood and a bunch of other interesting arguments, shall we say.
Maybe insensitive arguments?
Yeah, I suppose we could call it that. It's interesting that the clip was posted on YouTube, and it starts right before she got up in his face, so we don't really have much context about it. So as Singh's aides were trying to usher the woman away, she yelled at them as well, saying that she would, quote, contact the police immediately if anyone touched her, and then resumed yelling at Singh, basically right in his face without actually touching him. So it's clear that the heckler was trying to get a reaction out of Singh. But Singh, of course, actually told the protester that everyone in the room supported her and believed in her rights. And he insisted on saying, no, we don't stand for that. We stand for love and courage. And then he kept repeating love and courage to try and get the crowd going as well, right? So she tried to assert that he supports intolerance and Sharia law, and he kind of put that out there and was extending patience and compassion. Like, he didn't lose his cool. He didn't resort to swear words. And it kind of actually raised his reputation because of his response. And he was actually getting a lot of praise in the media because of it. And the exchange, of course, was caught on videotape. The whole bit lasted more than 4 minutes, and it later blew up all over social media with a lot of people condemning what the heckler said.
Even Americans were commenting on this on social media.
Yeah,
so this not was, just Canada. This was,
yeah, and this was quite a big thing, because for something to happen in Canadian politics to blow up globally is quite something. I mean, a lot of what happens in the States gets put out there, and a lot of it blows up globally, but what happens in Canada generally stays pretty quiet, I think. So what many of the people are noting is that the heckler, she apparently misidentified that Singh is Sikh, and it's important to note that Sikhs are not Muslims, and that just because Singh wears a turban and a long beard doesn't mean he's Muslim, of course. And a lot of the media have been talking about that. But as Singh notes, many people have commented that I could have just said that I'm not Muslim. In fact, many have clarified that I'm actually Sikh. While I'm proud of who I am, I purposely didn't go down that road because it suggests that their hate would be okay if I was Muslim. So the heckler was later identified as Jennifer Bush, who is a independent activist with a lot of groups that are trying to promote the so-called Canadian values and the anti-Islamification of Canada, as what Rise Canada describes itself. And in an interview with Rebel Media's David Menzies, she explained that she was, quote, encouraged to ask questions, and that she wanted to ask, quote, why he continually votes in favor of Sharia, opposing the niqab ban, M103, these kinds of things. You know, the clearly high-energy Jennifer Bush mentions that the clip cuts out where she got up and calmly asked about M103, and that Singh refused to answer, and that it cuts to right where she was, quote, getting hysterical. She mentions that the reason for questioning him was because he was Sikh and apparently voting in favor of what she calls, quote, Islamic legislation. So, admittedly, this is a pretty crazy story, and it's interesting to see how the media has covered it. The Rebel went to the other side to get Bush's side of the story, whereas all the other media outlets just took quotes from Singh, and they kind of covered it from that one side of the story. And while I think that Bush might have had good intentions initially, she definitely crossed the line in trying to get her point across, because now a lot of other people are talking about Singh because of his skin color and religion,
right,
and what he wears, rather than his actual policies. I think you might mention that we talked a lot about the NDP's policies back on episode 29, and this story here, all about an NDP candidate, nothing to do with policy, just because that's how the media has covered it. And I think it's really important to note that while the media is actually covering the race somewhat now because of this, they're not focused on the right things. They're not talking about what the candidates are actually standing for. They're just talking about Singh and how he is Sikh and not Muslim.
Right. And, you know, I just want to clarify something here, in that, you know, it says in her question, she said why he continually votes in favor of Sharia, opposing the niqab ban, M103, and all these kinds of things. Well, ordinarily, you would not assume that something along the lines of that was linked towards Sharia law, which is the law system of the medieval Muslim faith. But things such as opposing the niqab ban, M103, potentially could ultimately lead there. And, you know, it's a fair question to ask towards any kind of candidate why they vote on a specific issue, because, you know, Singh goes to parliament, he votes, he has a voting record that is a part of this NDP leadership race. And while the question is fair and she didn't ask it right, it's definitely something the other side that the media should actually be talking about here, because just as we saw with Trudeau, just as we saw with the NDP here in Alberta, the media does not tend to do its due diligence for this side of the political spectrum, or so it appears.
Yeah, in fact, the article that came out of the Vancouver Sun was that Jagmeet Singh heckler video may be his Trudeau boxing match moment, trying to suggest that because of this, he would surge in popularity just like Trudeau did after he had his boxing match against conservative Senator Patrick Brazeau. And they were talking about how it's raised his profile and how a lot of his reputation has gone up and how a lot more people are talking about him, but they're talking about him in a different way than what I think a lot of people would want. And that's about his policies and what he does with in parliament and what he does as an elected official. And this NDP race that's going on, hardly any of it has been on policy. I think we noted back on episode 29 that There's a lot of candidates that don't really have concrete policies on what they want to do.
They're just focused on that justice word that we talked about that week.
Yeah, indeed. And what they do focus on is it's all about buzzwords like justice, social justice, or any other kind of justice, right? So in a sense, it's almost like his response in interviews, Singh's response, that is that he's deflecting the topic away from his policies and to on that he is a Sikh and not Muslim. I mean, a lot of the media is going to be focused on this, but they're not focused on the right thing. And I think that's what the problem
is. It's 2017 and we should be ultimately be focused on equality for all. And, you know, the people who tend to say that most of the time, the NDP in this case, seem to like to compartmentalize people as well in the same way. Mm-hmm. So
indeed.
All right. That's pretty interesting. And you know, just when you thought the NDP race was getting boring, here we go before voting starts at the end of the month or so. So, mm-hmm. All righty. So our next story comes to Alberta, and a company, an oil sands company, has come to defense of the NDP government's carbon tax here after Brian Jean attacked the NDP. So this week, as we all know, Brian Jean is running for the leadership of the United Conservative Party. He told the oil sands trade show and conference in Fort McMurray this past week that Rachel Notley wants to, quote, close down the oil sands. This then later spurred Satoshi Abe, president of Japan Oil Sands Limited, otherwise known as JACOS, to say that he supports the carbon tax and his company supports the carbon tax. And ultimately, he thinks that, quote, not only for us, but all energy companies know that we have to address the concerns of climate change. I would like the government to take leadership on that. What the story doesn't go into here is that the carbon tax is disproportionately felt by many more everyday people in Alberta rather than the oil sands companies. That's simple math and common sense, because there are more Albertans than there are oil companies. It's a simple fact that 4 million is greater than the 100 or so that there probably are. Not only do people pay the upfront carbon tax on fuels and electricity, but it's also felt on anything that arrives to us by truck or train or practically anything that moves. We also feel the carbon tax when we visit any storefront, because they pay the carbon tax on fuel and electricity as well. They pay it on things that they import by way of truck or train or plane. And the price of the carbon tax is working its way into almost every aspect of life here in Alberta, if you were to break the pricing of things down. So this article was in the CBC, and ultimately it's very short-sighted by the CBC to have a story on climate leadership and the carbon tax without pointing out these cost increases that are happening in Alberta. And also, while JACOS may feel that the carbon tax is taking leadership, it probably doesn't feel like leadership for people who have to pay more when they get gas or go buy food or pay that electricity bill. And just kind of tangentially related to this, and kind of a carbon tax update here in Alberta, this week it was announced by the NDP government that they have converted a $176 million loan that the city of Edmonton took out under the Alison Redford government to a grant. This, of course, means that the city will not need to pay it back. The loan was to be used for the Southeast LRT expansion in Edmonton, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, the Valley Line. And with this, it's kind of interesting timing, because there's a municipal election going on, and under the right circumstances, this could be seen as the NDP delving into this election to support the current mayor's re-election campaign, because if the mayor is delivering on a promise where the city doesn't need to pay back $600 million, that looks kind of good for the mayor, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So at the end of the day, the carbon tax is working its way into Alberta here. And, you know, it's a question I think many people have is this being felt everywhere? Well, yeah, it's working its way in. But at the end of the day, this entire carbon tax was able to happen because the oil sands companies did get a discount on the rate that they would have to pay for this. Because could anyone honestly imagine a corporation standing up for a piece of legislation that ultimately will lower their bottom line too much? I don't think so. So.
Yeah, I mean, they're very upfront with what they talk about in the media, right? They'll always try and hide it under corporate speak, but in a sense, they would never actually publicly support something that would privately hurt them. So it just stands to reason that they're probably going to get kickbacks at some point about something, right?
That was built into the carbon tax when that was being discussed. And, if we were doing the show back then, I think that would have been a good topic for us because that really wasn't talked about too much. And it was all on the whole leadership aspect of the tax and greening the environment for it and ultimately looking forward to capping or at least reducing emissions on this. But there really was nothing done on the burden of where this tax falls, because in standard economics, you can either have a tax, if you have a tax, that can either be absorbed by the corporation entirely, by the customer entirely, or it can also be split somewhere in the middle. This one is split in the middle, with of course the most of it falling on the burden of the consumers, because we ultimately have more transactions than the oil sands do, and there's just so many more of us. So it's a question of burden here and whether or not that's something that's going to get a fair shake. Because, I mean, obviously, you see the CBC come out with a story like this, and I'm kind of wondering what the idea was in behind the scenes here, because with a headline like "Company Defends Rachel Notley's Support for the Oil Sands After Brian Jean Attacks the NDP," it just seemed like this was a bit of an odd angle to go with the story, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and it seems like they're taking it just from the one side as well, and they're more mentioning about the companies, but they're not actually talking about all Albertans, which is what the
Or the
tax would
economic
affect.
ramifications of the tax itself. So.
Yeah, indeed. And all they have to do to look at what the economic ramifications of carbon taxes would be is to look over into BC over here and to see what happened with fuel rates and heating expenses and all the other things that are affected by the carbon
Oh,
tax.
yeah, definitely.
And it's just interesting how the media is just taking the one side of the issue. They're not exploring all of the alternative sides that there are to this issue. And I think with something as big as the carbon tax, it'll probably be an election issue the next time that the province
Oh,
goes
I
to
bet it
vote,
will.
right?
I bet it will. Because that wasn't in the platform, I don't think. So.
Indeed.
Alrighty then. We'll definitely keep an eye on this, and it's not like the CBC doesn't have the resources to talk about the other side of the story. It's not as though the case that the economy is doing so well that we can parade the carbon tax around as a huge success here. But anyways.
That's what they're trying to do over here in BC, is that they're trying to say that the carbon tax is the reason why the economy is doing so well in BC. But that's a story for another day, right?
I've never heard of a tax stimulating the economy, but as I understand it, you do have something about taxpayers in BC for us right now.
Yeah, indeed. So let's head on to our next story, and that is where the new BC NDP government, they're kind of expected to have some hiccups with the with what's been going on recently. I mean, we've only covered it quite a bit since the election back in May and through all this summer turbulence, right? But the overall transition of power really hasn't been that smooth. And during the transition, Horgan's team fired the province's quote, LNG advocate, who was former BC Liberal leader Gordon Wilson. And before we can talk about that topic, I think we should talk about Gordon Wilson himself, just to get a further perspective on who he is and why he's pursuing a case here.
I just want to interject that LNG stands for liquid natural gas, so it's a natural resource export.
Indeed, yes. And we've also talked about liquid natural gas before on the show as well. What with Petronas trying to canceling their investment in the plant near Prince Rupert on the coast. But anyways, back to Gordon Wilson. So Wilson is a bit of a political chameleon. I mean, he was leader of the BC Liberals from 1987 to 1993, and he brought the party out of the woods and into the political mainstream as a credible alternative to the NDP and the Social Credit. In 1993, he lost to Gordon Campbell in our leadership review after Wilson was found to be having an affair with another Liberal MLA, Judy Tayabji, who was actually recently promoted to House Leader at that time. And within weeks, he and Tayabji left the Liberal caucus and formed a new party, the Progressive Democratic Alliance, and he ended up being the sole member elected in the 1996 election. And a few years later after that, in 1999, he shocked everyone by disbanding his party and crossing the floor to sit as an NDP cabinet minister, who he once fought against. And he even ran in the NDP leadership race the following year, and then he ended up losing his seat in Gordon Campbell's Liberal landslide in 2001. So for over a decade, he was quiet, and then he endorsed Christy Clark in her leadership race, and she ended up winning, and Wilson ended up going back to the Liberals and became the LNG advocate, and this paid him about $150,000 a year. So it's kind of really hard to have sympathy for Wilson and his firing, because he's clearly a political opportunist. So let's enter the NDP in 2017, who, under the power of a non-confidence vote and propped up by three Green MLAs, and the mass firings of the old Liberal staffers had just begun. So, and Wilson was just one of them who was fired, but he received a lot more attention because of who he was and because of how Premier John Horgan and Jobs, Trade and Technology Minister Bruce Ralston fired him. Wilson sued last month in a defamation lawsuit after Horgan and Ralston made comments implying that the NDP reviewed Wilson's work as the LNG advocate and that Wilson did little to earn his money. And the review turned up, quote, nothing written by him, Ralston said, adding that, quote, it's very difficult to see that he accomplished anything other than to cash his checks. Horgan ended up piling on, insisting that Wilson produced, quote, no briefings, no reports, no memos, and no staff meetings during his 3.5 years promoting BC's liquefied natural gas sector. There is just one problem, though. Wilson filed more than 180 pages of reports, memos, and progress updates to the former Liberal government during his first 15 months on the job alone, and those documents can be found with a simple search of the government's own open information website, where the records were posted 2 years ago after, ironically, they were requested by the NDP under Freedom of Information Law. So not only did they know about it, if they did their own independent review of Wilson, they would have easily found all the work that he did, because they were the ones who requested it in the first place. So Wilson's lawsuit claims that Horgan and Ralston undertook a campaign to destroy the plaintiff's reputation, adding that, quote, the defamatory words uttered by the defendants were made out of malice. Horgan and Ralston, of course, both apologized to Wilson right after he mentioned that he was going to sue, but he ended up suing for $5 million anyways, and now Horgan and Ralston are both asking BC taxpayers to pay their legal bills in the $5 million libel lawsuit. Horgan and Ralston confirmed on Wednesday that they have filed what are called indemnity applications for taxpayers to pay for two high-priced lawyers to defend them in the case filed by Wilson. And since then, the case has had nothing but biased coverage in the media. So there's been a lot of people in the media on either side. There's been a lot of support for the NDP and what they did, saying that obviously, you know, the Liberal leader, the former Liberal leader, was just getting kickbacks from the former BC Liberal government, and that he wasn't really doing much important anyways. And then there was the other side that had Mike Smith of the Vancouver Province writing that, quote, the legal bills will be huge, and it looks like you'll pay for them, because I have little doubt that the indemnity applications will be approved, but the legal bills could be just the first whack to your wallet. Wilson could win big bucks in court with taxpayers picking up the tab. And if there's an out-of-court settlement, sources tell me there are already back-channel talks underway, and you can bet you'll cough up any loot paid to Wilson. What a disgusting way to treat BC taxpayers. It could have just been avoided if Horgan and Ralston had just fired Wilson and kept their mouth shut. They had to sling the slime instead. Now it will cost you. So that's kind of pretty strong language from a journalist who's supposed to be pretty impartial about the whole thing and just reporting the facts. Many are actually railing against Smith for his, quote, biased article, and lots are actually defending the NDP because of it. So we've got two different sides of the media here that are reporting on the issue.
The media are going at each other on their own. They're eating their own here.
Exactly. And if they would just cover the case properly like I did there, it would be really clear who's in the wrong.
I mean, like you said, that all the data is right there. You know, it just takes a little while to look. And, you know, one side being biased is not an excuse for the other side to go and do the same thing except worse. And what's more is that's not even an excuse to cover things up. So that's just really, really disgraceful, especially when it comes to all the money that could be being paid here, because, you know, this is just, you know, the media turning a mountain into a molehill, it seems. And that's not needed this week, because there were also other stories we could have done here, such as the fact that the BC government is raising taxes on people. The BC government is lifting the cap on the carbon tax. The carbon tax itself is actually going up. So taxes are going up in BC in addition to this. And this kind of story here is preventing that information from getting out in the mainstream media, which people in BC need to know. So,
yeah, exactly. I mean, there's lots going on this past week with the new budget that came out. They're raising a lot of social spending, and they're raising the corporate tax rate, and they're raising a bunch of other taxes,
yeah,
and the carbon tax to pay for all this extra social spending. And it's not being talked about whatsoever because of this silly fiasco, what I would call. Just because someone got hurt feelings and the other person decided to start insulting him for little to no reason. And now we're all going to have to pay for it. It's not like Horgan and Ralston are going to have to pay for their own fees. I mean, it'll either get covered by their party or the government or by the taxpayers.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
and the taxpayers don't need that, because the carbon tax is ending its revenue neutral phase, which is unfortunate. And also coming out of the budget, your BC debt is almost going to be climbing towards $1 billion. So,
yeah. I mean, there's so much more that we could talk about here, but it's difficult to. It's just interesting how they've actually made Wilson look like an injured party here. I mean, he's been switching parties every so often, and he's been trying to get into a place where it's good. And he probably looked at this and thought, oh, I have an opportunity to make a lot of money here. I can just sue them for defamation, and I might actually win. And he will. He probably will win too, because of what it was said and how obviously false it was. It's just amazing how the NDP are actually making him look sympathetic, right?
Absolutely. All right. Well, also speaking of sympathetic, we're going to move on to our firing line segment here. So this is a headline that came from Global News, their investigative team, entitled, "What Happens When an ISIS Member Returns to Canada? The Story of One Toronto Area Man." So this past Monday, of course, marked the 16th anniversary of the September 11th attacks in the U.S. Most coverage focused on memorials, remembering those lost, and looking at where we're at today. But Global took it one step further. On September 11th, they published this story with the title, "What Happens When an ISIS Member Returns to Canada? The Story of One Toronto Area Man." So the story starts off chronicling the Pakistani Canadian's journey to Syria for 6 months. He had served in the, quote, morality police of the ISIS army. He goes through his journey to Syria and how he got back to Canada through Turkey and then ultimately Pakistan. And then he says, "We all do things we regret." So that's the first bullet point of this story, where it becomes bizarre here that, you know, something this impactful about, I want to say, humanizing a terrorist would be published on September 11th. So the RCMP in this story say they pay very close attention to people who return. They want to make sure they won't seek to radicalize others or continue the fight here in Canada. And I think we can all agree with that the RCMP is doing their job there, because we definitely don't want that happening.
Yeah, indeed.
Global News also chatted with one of their recruits who was living in, quote, a spacious house with a satellite dish and a two-car garage, and attends a university in the Toronto region. His identity was kept anonymous because he feared arrest by the RCMP. So we have one of these former ISIS recruits living in the Toronto area, going to school, doing an interview freely with Global, but Global keeps his identity secret because he fears arrest. A former terrorist who was with ISIS. Does that make sense to publish this on September 11th? That's issue number two.
And why would he fear arrest if he didn't do anything wrong to begin with? Right? I mean, right? Normal people don't want to be anonymous because they fear that the RCMP is going to arrest them.
Yeah. The story of the fighter is further chronicled, and it gets worrying when he says the Turkish authorities who arrested him on his return from Syria. So he went to Syria, stayed for a few months, and then plotted his route back through Syria and got into Turkey where he was arrested. And the Turkish authorities said he should go through Pakistan because of his former connections there. He had a Pakistani passport. He stayed in Pakistan for 2 years, then came back to Toronto in the summer of 2016. Now, upon arriving at the Pearson Airport in Toronto, he went through the usual passport checks and security screenings with no problem. Though he also did admit that he was in Syria. And he was allowed to come back in with zero problems. Now, the RCMP kind of hinted at, the article hints at, that this was trapped because he was traveling on a Pakistani passport. But still, that I think should also raise some alarm bells right there, that someone who was in Syria for that length of time is able to come in through Toronto Pearson Airport and not set off any security alarm bells. It was only when...
Literal or figuratively.
Exactly.
I mean, the fact that he was there in that time period should have sent warning bells to CSIS, I think.
Yes. And it was only when he posted online on Twitter that he was a former ISIS member that the national security authorities became interested in him. That's how long it took, and that's what it took. For this guy who was in Syria fighting, came back to Canada, he got in just fine, and then when he posted online he was a former ISIS fighter, that's when they became interested. The article wraps with Hamid Slimi, who heads the National Security Committee of the Canadian Council of Imams, and he said that, quote, they need support and guidance. He also went on to say that they should not be kept isolated. The RCMP told the returnee that he should, quote, stay focused on school, and if the officer were to come back, he would be charged. He likely hasn't been charged because of the lack of evidence, they said. So, as you can see here, there's a number of problems with this story. First and foremost, it attempts to humanize those who want to or wanted to disrupt the fabric of Western life on September 11th. Secondly, it raises those alarming questions of why someone who was in Syria came to Canada. Ultimately raised no alarm bells until he posted on social media. And thirdly, it minimizes the consequences for any potential recruits wanting to go fight for ISIS to say, you can go there, you can have your time, do whatever you do there, and you can come back, and there's going to be no consequence for that. And, you know, quite honestly, from Global, this isn't what's needed on an anniversary of September 11th. And quite frankly, after the terrorist attack in the UK yesterday, it's not time for this kind of story. So I appreciate the investigative journalism aspect, but oh boy, lots of alarm bells here. And you know, you really don't hear about this kind of thing.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's probably a good thing that we don't hear about this, because think of this, if this was front page news and all these potential recruits of ISIS saw this, they'd be like, yeah, sure, why not? Let's go do it. They don't seem to care about us doing that here, so let's there's no consequences. I mean, I don't know why they would try and publicize this sort of thing anyways, that he was able to get there and then stay in Pakistan for a couple of years and then come back to Toronto. And then apparently they didn't raise any questions about that. That's a bit worrying, don't you think? I mean, we have to go through all this airport security whenever we go to the airports and go to fly. And yet they're letting someone like this in really easily. It makes no sense to me, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, you can question what the authorities are doing on this, and if the airport screenings are proper and not. But I think, you know, I ultimately think that this raises a lot of questions in terms of the West's approach towards terrorism and extremism in general. Because, I mean, what we're doing right now is not working, and the UK is evidence of that. And the lax focus on what we see here—it's just whoa. It's just not right to mm-hmm. have something this massive published on global news on September 11th, 16 years after the terrorist attacks, and all these bombshells are in this story. So, I think if there's to be any kind of security analysis done in the upcoming fall session of Parliament, that might raise some interesting questions and discussions, but you, of course, know we can't talk about this kind of thing without someone being branded a racist, right? So,
mm-hmm.
All right. And that leads us nicely into our word of the week, which is insensitive, both for the Jagmeet Singh story and this story here. So as we all know, insensitive is an adjective, and it's defined as showing or feeling no concern for others' feelings or an insensitive remark. So not sensitive to physical sensation could be one, or not aware or able to respond to something. Both were in many ways insensitive to painting, as the example here. But in our episode this week, insensitive is going to be referring to the insensitive nature of global news publishing a story like this on September 11th. And what we outlined in the Jagmeet Singh story, how some of the comments made in that are insensitive as well.
You know, what's really interesting to go one step further is that the Jagmeet Singh story also happened on the weekend, and most of the media coverage on it was on September 11th as well, and how they were focusing on how he was Sikh and not Muslim, and all that was going on September 11th as well. So
yeah.
It's very like curious timing by the media and how they're portraying their journalism on such a day, you know?
Yeah. Well, Global and Vancouver Sun are owned by the same parent company, right?
Pretty much almost all of them are, aren't they?
Yeah. Alrighty, folks. Well, that's it for this episode of The Right Side. If you want more, you want show notes, that's at rightsidenews.ca. If you want to subscribe on iTunes, rightsidenews.ca/iTunes. Also YouTube/YouTube. And we're on Twitter and Facebook at RightsideCA. So with that being said, we'll see you next week for another episode of The Right Side. Thank you for sharing your time with us.
And hope you guys have a good rest of your week, and we will see you back in a week with more of The Right Side of the News.